Ready for the show? I'm ready to start.
10, 9, ignition sequence starts. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour.
Yes, my friends, welcome back to ET First Contact Radio. I'm your host, my name is Maarten Horst, and I bring you always the latest galactic news. And today I have a very prominent guest, a very interesting guest, and he has an amazing story to tell. So I will just give him a little introduction. His name is Uri Geller, entertainer and spy. Uri Geller is one of the world's most investigated and celebrated mystifiers, famous around the globe for his mind-blending abilities. He has led a unique life shrouded in the debate, controversy and mystery. In 2012, Uri was awarded with the prestigious Golden Grolla Award at the 11th Masters of Magic Convention in St. Vincent, Italy, for inspiring the world of magic. In 2012, Uri also received the Star Foundation Award at the House of Commons House of Parliament in London in recognition for his charity work. In 2013, filmmaker Vikram Yaniti debuted a documentary at the Sheffield Film Festival in the UK, commissioned by the BBC, entitled The Secret Life of Uri Geller, Psychic Spy. Uyanti directed the Oscar-winning Muhammad Ali documentary When We Were Kings. What Kings Publishing followed up the film with the release of a brand new biography of Uri Geller under the same title and written by celebrated Financial Times journalist Jonathan Makrolis. Okay, this is important information to share about the latest work, and we will talk about the book, of course, with Uri. So first, I want to welcome Uri. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Martin. Thank you very much for inviting me onto your show. And I'm pleased to be with you. I think the weather in Holland is very good because here the sun is still shining.
Yes, we are not that far from each other. You are in the UK and I'm in Holland, not that far from each other. But with internet and light speed, we can talk and make a beautiful show together and share the latest news that you have to share with the listeners. I just have a question, a quick question. Do you want me to read to the listeners the latest work that was sent to me by your... it's about the new book.
Oh, you mean the publisher?
Yes.
No need to. Look,
okay.
let me tell you in short what it is all about. When the BBC commissioned Vikram Jayanti, who, as you said, is an Oscar-winning director, mm-hmm. to do The Secret Life of Uri Geller, they asked me whether I would be interested to be interviewed in this documentary. Now, I thought that they will not get anywhere because the secret work I have done is quite secretive and confidential. Yes, it is true that in the last 40 years, I have given almost subliminal clues to the secret work I do or I did for intelligence services like the CIA or the Mossad and other intelligence agencies around the world. But nobody took it seriously. They thought that I was making it up. Anyhow, I agreed to be interviewed for the documentary. And to my surprise, the director, Vikram Jayanti, with the, you know, with the aura of having an Oscar and with his charisma and personality, he managed to wriggle himself into the right people who used to handle me throughout the decades. And as a matter of fact, the book was written because of the BBC documentary. Obviously, the book is more extensive. And it has, like you said, been written by Jonathan Margolis, who writes for the Financial Times here in England. But what is very interesting, I know I'm boasting a little now, but there is a little quote on the cover of the book under the title. And this is what it says. In my experiments, Uri was superb, astonishing, a superstar. And this comes from Dr. Kit Green, former CIA Assistant National Intelligence Officer. Now, this is why the people who read the book, I believe, have to take it seriously, not because of me, not because I'm the subject of this book, but because it opens up doors to the world of espionage, especially now when we have all this controversy surrounding and shrouding the NSA, National Security Agency in America. We learn that we are all being listened to, our emails are read, our text messages are read, our BlackBerry messengers are read. There is no privacy anymore. Every call is recorded and stored away. I guarantee you, Martin, that this conversation that we're having now, this telephone interview, is being recorded by some secret agency in one country or more. So the book is called The Secret Life of Uri Geller. It's available on Amazon.com. Please get it because you'll find it fascinating. Again, it's not my book. And the BBC documentary is available to see on my website, which is urigeller.com. I think you will find it also very, very interesting.
Yes, Uri. And I know that you are an energy master, actually, in the work you do with bending spoons and all the magic things that you are able to do. And I have just recently had an interview with Michael Monk, who is also an energy master. You will find his work very fascinating indeed. But I would like to talk with you about the current affairs in the world and the things that are happening, especially with the flight that disappeared, MH370, Malaysian Airlines. You have last week made a Twitter action, and it was published in the Daily Mirror, where you have asked people to help you to remote view on where the plane is and where the passengers are.
That is correct. Let me just elaborate a little more on that.
Okay.
During the last decades, we used to do very interesting remote viewing work. One of the programs that was set up by the CIA, I believe that I contributed to that indirectly. But a very interesting story is the following. A Russian secret plane carrying secret codes, secret information, crashed in Zaire, and it went into the jungle. It crashed in the jungle. As you can imagine, the plane fell into the jungle and right under the canopy of the jungle, which meant at that time that very sophisticated satellites could not detect it because it was under cover of trees. Today, we have much more sophisticated and advanced technology, and satellites can actually penetrate clouds and trees and so forth. But at that time, they couldn't. So the CIA wanted remote viewers to find the plane. Now, all this is very secret. And later on, a few months later, or I can't, maybe a year later, this was under President Carter's presidency. President Carter finished his term, and he was lecturing in a university. And a student got up and asked him, "President Carter, did anything strange or bizarre or unusual happen to you while you were the president?" And President Carter thought for a second, and then he said, "Oh, yeah, a Russian plane, top secret plane, crashed in Zaire into the jungle, and a psychic found the plane for us." So this is an amazing story, which is absolutely true. Otherwise, President Carter wouldn't say it. But now going back to the Malaysian airline, what happened is the following. I got a request from Malaysia to try to locate the plane. Now, I very naively, I would say maybe foolishly even, very innocently, I tweeted it on my Twitter and Facebook. And I basically asked what you said before. I asked my followers to help me to locate the plane, also using remote viewing or their intuition, whatever you want to call it. And there was a big backlash. You know, I'm hugely controversial, Martin. You know that. There are so many skeptics out there who don't believe anything to do with the paranormal. But most people were very responsive, and they sent me messages. And I tried to deduce through their messages if my hunch was correct, mm-hmm. if my intuitive answer was right.
Right.
So I emailed a certain individual in Malaysia who happens to be a substantial person in Malaysia, a few of my theories, and that's exactly what happened. And the Mirror or the Daily, one of the newspapers saw my Twitter, the tweet that I tweeted about the plane. They wrote the story, and that's how it came out.
That's very interesting, because I have to tell you that I believe personally that the plane entered a UFO and went into some undisclosed location. And the story that I really follow and I'm interested in is that when disclosure happens, you know, ET UFO disclosure, the plane will come back and the listeners will tell in front of the camera what they have experienced. What's your take on this?
Okay, Martin, I respect all kinds of theories because I myself I'm a believer in extraterrestrial life. I'm a believer in UFOs. I've never seen an alien, but there's no doubt in my mind that our planet is visited by some higher intelligence. Now, concerning the plane, I do not believe your theory. I do not believe that the plane went into a UFO or into any warped black hole or some kind of a cosmic whirlpool out there in the universe. My theories are more logical and rational in nature. I gave coordinates to where I think the plane is. I cannot reveal to you whether I believe it was hijacked or kidnapped or crashed or suicide. That I will keep personally a secret until the authorities in Malaysia research and investigate what I sent them. But those are the possibilities, really, that it was either hijacked and indeed it landed somewhere in those dirty countries, you know, where you find all the terrorist groups. I'm talking about the areas of Kazakhstan and Pakistan and etc. It could have even landed in North Korea. Even maybe, I don't think the plane had enough fuel, but maybe in one of the very close African countries that is close to the Indian Ocean, or indeed there was some kind of a fight in the cockpit and the pilot tried to save the plane. Whatever happened in the cockpit, we don't know yet, and the plane crashed indeed in a location. I felt two or three locations, and I did send those coordinates to Malaysia. So that is my theory. But, you know, I don't rule out your theory. I cannot rule it out, because if you're an open-minded person, then, Martin, you know that anything and everything is possible, because there are infinity spaces out there. So if there is infinity, which means there is no end, maybe there is a slight percentage, a quarter of 1%, that indeed you are right, but I would not bet on that.
Okay, well, I'm in my radio show open for all suggestions, and I don't know exactly what the truth is, so for me it's okay if you come up with your theories, because all possibilities are there, and nobody has yet claimed what exactly happened, and the plane is not being found yet, so...
You know, Martin, in the book, The Secret Life of Uri Geller, CIA Master Spy, and I please urge your listeners to just get it from my website or from Amazon. I'm not making any money out of this book, and if I do, it'll all go to sick children, so this is not a money-making venture for me here. I just want to say that in the book, The Secret Life, there are certain chapters that are so weird and so bizarre that happened to scientists who were testing me, that I warn your readers, the potential people who might get the book and read it, that you got to have almost like a health warning when you get into those chapters, because they're so unbelievable. But since your program is geared and it's tailored for target audience who believe in UFOs and aliens and so on, I think that the readers of my book, or the Jonathan Margolis's book, will have a broader and purer or cleaner understanding that maybe there is some kind of an extraterrestrial force involved in my career. So I can hardly wait. If any of your listeners will read the book, you're welcome to email me what you think. My email address, I'm very accessible. My email address is on my website, which is urigeller.com. And after you read The Secret Life of Uri Geller, let me know what you think.
Well, I'm very interested to read your book, and I will see if I can get a copy. But Uri, now that you are live with us on the T-First Contact Radio, I want to ask you if there's anything particular that you want to share with the listeners, because I think you have had many interviews in the past, And all the standard questions have been asked to you. And I don't want to go into standard questions and the work that you did, because I know what you did and I've seen you many times on television. And all the listeners are familiar with your work, of course. But I want to ask you if you have any pressing issues that you want to share right now on this show that I don't ask you, but that you want to make public.
No, you can ask me whatever you want. If you have any questions, you may ask me. Whatever I want to make public, my life, Martin, is a very open book. Now that the BBC documentary is out and the book is out, The Secret Life, I'm pretty much exposed. It worries me to a small degree, because quite a lot has been exposed, and especially about the espionage, my kind of the dark side of what I've done. I've never actually accepted anything negative that could hurt people. I even catapulted out of an experiment where I was asked to stop the heart of a pig. But overall, I only did things that helped bring maybe, look, again, don't grab my words and try to make me out to be some kind of a guru or a miracle worker or a healer. I'm not. I'm just a very ordinary, down-to-earth person. But for instance, when the Americans asked me to bombard the Russians to sign the nuclear arms reduction treaty, I'm all for less nuclear weapons in this world. So the Americans took me to Geneva. I was there standing next to Al Gore, to the head of the American Foreign Relations Committee, Senator Claiborne Pell, to Ambassador Max Kempelman, and to the Russian, Yuli Vorontsov, whose mind I was instructed to bombard. So I got really close to him, and I focused my eyes on his head, and I simply, basically, projected into his brain the words, sign, sign, sign. And believe it or not, the Russians signed. Now, whether I totally did this alone, I can't claim that, because there are a lot of people involved. But there's no doubt in my mind that I was an influence. I was influential on these talks. And there are quite a few of these missions and targets and tasks I was given to do. Recently, I was asked by the Israelis to help the Israeli Red Cross, Magen David Adom, to get into the International Red Cross. Parallel to that, they asked me to also help the Palestinians, the Red Crescent, to somehow get into the International Red Cross together with them, on the condition that both parties, the Magen David Adom, the Israeli Red Cross, and the Palestine Red Crescent, will sign an amicable agreement. So that wasn't an easy task. It took me 3 years to do, flying to the State Department, and a lot of important people were involved, like Condoleezza Rice, and I had meetings with the President of Switzerland and Arik Sharon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In the end, Martin, a very bizarre thing happened. Both parties were arguing at a big table in Geneva, both Palestinians and Israelis, and they couldn't get to any conditions that both parties posed. And then I looked at Micheline Calmeray, who was then the foreign minister, and later on she became the president of Switzerland, and I asked her to tell the waiter to bring a spoon. And she laughed, she smiled, because she knew what I was about to do. So the waiter brought a spoon, a big one, and I picked it up and I said, "Hey everyone, look at this now." And I started, the usual stuff I do on television, you've seen it a million times. I bent the spoon and it continued bending, and then I handed it into the hands of the Palestinian negotiator. They all freaked out and they signed the agreement. So sometimes when you use a bit of show business, a bit of pizzazz, a bit of your charisma, your character, your personality, rather than any psychic stuff, these things do work. And these are the things I just want to share with your listeners, because sometimes it has nothing to do with my abilities or my skills or my talents. It's really to do with a very down-to-earth, rational approach.
Yes, Uri, you want to make this world a better place, and that's what I also want to. And that's why I interview many people on this radio station, so that the truth comes out about our reality, because we can live in peace altogether. And I want to commend you on what you did. And I just want to talk a bit about consciousness, because I asked in my last interview with Michael Monk, what is the most important unanswered question on earth? And he said the question is, what are we? And I said, then what are we? He said, consciousness. Do you agree on that, Uri?
Look, Martin, the question is a mammoth question. It's huge, because we know very little. You know, since 1924, when Albert Einstein came up with his brilliant, maverick, amazing theory, and not only theory, but it was a tangible equation, scientific equation, which we all remember from school, E equals MC squared. With that equation, Albert Einstein scientifically proved that everything in the universe is made from energy, and he further went to prove that energy cannot be destroyed. So we all know that everything in the universe is energy. You, me, the telephone that I'm holding, I will tap the table with the phone. Listen. It sounds solid, doesn't it? But it's not.
No.
The table is not solid. Even the table on which I was banging the receiver of the telephone is energy, except it's vibrating in a certain frequency that feels to us that it's solid.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, what is consciousness? Are you really right now in existence? Question, or am I creating you with my consciousness, with my inner reality, with quantum entanglement? Are you really there in Holland, or are you creating Uri Geller? Are we at all here? Or are we pure vibrations of consciousness? I don't really know. I'm looking out at a beautiful view. I see the River Thames in front of me. I see gorgeous tall trees. But is it really there? Or is it just very, very, very refined, pure, conscious energy that is creating this reality to me into that consciousness? And the truth of the matter is that we know very little.
Mm-hmm.
We have humanity is, 300,000 years old? I don't, now bringing in the UFOs and aliens and extraterrestrials. For instance, I don't buy into the Darwin theory,
no,
that we all crawled out of the muck and we, from amphibians, from little fish, we crawled out with legs, and then we became monkeys, and then we became humans. I want to believe that tens of thousands of years ago, maybe a UFO did crash on planet Earth, and we are children of the stars. We are star children. How can you prove that? There are lots of interesting monuments and old ancient carvings and all kinds of Machu Picchu Peruvian airports.
Yes.
There are plenty of evidence to the fact that we are and have been visited by an extraterrestrial intelligence. So the question goes back again, what is really consciousness? We don't really know. You can't even answer me the most elementary question. Martin, what came first, the chicken or the egg?
It's a good question. Maybe both at the same time.
Yeah, that could be both at the same time. But the fact is that you don't know.
Yeah.
So we are going we are basically going with the flow of the universe and beyond. I think there is a higher intelligence out there, maybe more than one, probably more than one.
Yes.
There is outer space, and then there is inner space.
Mm-hmm.
The pencil that I'm holding in my hand, or the marker, I'm holding a Sharpie in my hand. If I look at the tip of the Sharpie, and if you travel into the tip of the Sharpie, my marker, in inner space, you will get into atoms, and into the atoms, molecules, atoms. You go on and on, you journey into inner space. It doesn't end. It's infinite. So there is an infinite to inner space, and there is infinite to outer space. And that's how I live my life. I let it happen. I let it unfold. It's like, you know, a good example is, again, I'm looking out at the River Thames. And just imagine our lives, a bottle floating on the river. And we are inside the bottle. The bottle inside the bottle is life. We inside the bottle can do whatever we wish. We can move around. But we cannot stop the flow of the bottle. That's destiny. That will flow. And that's the way I see my life. I have, and that's another maybe little revelation about my own philosophy. Just imagine my life as a car. A car that is driving in a very dark night from point A to point B, let's say from New York to Chicago, and it's very dark. And all I can see is 20 meters ahead of me because of my headlamps of the car. And that is my life. I only see those 20 meters. And then when I get to that point, I see another 20 meters, and so on and so on and so on. So that is, my life is not planned. I go with the flow. I let it unfold naturally with a universal vibration.
Yes, that's a beautiful analogy, Uri. Indeed, we travel with consciousness and we don't know where it's ending. And even if you are psychic and you know things ahead of time, still it's interesting to see how many surprises we can have at any time.
Very much so. And today, I put aside the show business coat. Yes, I still bend spoons and so on, but I've learned that you've got to be positive in life. And
yes.
Since I can you still hear me?
Yes, I can, yes.
If I can influence people with show business and my demonstrations, then I can also motivate them and inspire them and make them positive thinkers. So you see, Martin, today when I get an email from kids, from teenagers, and they ask me, oh, Mr. Geller, can you please teach us how to bend a spoon? My answer back on my BlackBerry to them is the following. I say to them, forget spoon bending. Instead, focus on school, create a target goal to go to university, become a positive thinker, never ever smoke, never touch drugs, and think of success. And that is really my message today. And I try to tell people that, to all our listeners now, that when you wake up tomorrow morning, put yourself in an attitude of gratitude. If you can do that, if you can put yourself in an attitude of gratitude, you will be a happier person. You will be a more fulfilling person. You will feel a fulfillment. You will feel a major, powerful, universal satisfaction.
Yes, I always live in an attitude of gratitude. Because every day is a new day, and I learned also to think positive. It's the way that I can survive, is to be in a positive attitude. And what I also do, Uri, on my radio show is to interview people who have a positive message and will contribute to a better world.
Well, that's very brilliant, and that's why I agreed to do your show. I really agreed to do it when you emailed me that you used to work with autistic children in Israel. And that touched me because Hannah and I and my brother-in-law, we open our house 2, 3, sometimes 4 times a year to terminally ill children. And they have fun in the garden, and I get a pilot to fly over the house and do aerobics, and I bend a spoon for them. But the core of the visit is really to inspire them to think positive so they can work with their doctors and take their medicine and become more positive about what they have. So when you told me that you did that work, I thought you're a good guy, and I'll do the interview. Because, you know, I usually do only very, very big radio shows, I hardly do small transmissions, but you sound like a great guy, and that's fantastic. Where are most your listeners based, Martin? Is it mainly around the world, or is it in Holland? Where are your listeners?
They are all over the world. I can just have a look now. I see.
Oh, you can see how many people listen to you?
Yes, I can. And I can also see from where. From Belgium, Netherlands, Poland, Norway, United States, Brazil, Venezuela, many other countries right now.
So to all those people everywhere, in Venezuela, Brazil, Poland, everywhere,
yeah.
I'm sending you lots of love. I'm sending you a big hug. I'm sending you a big kiss. And I really hope that you're enjoying what we are saying here. And any one of you out there, if you want to ask me a question, please just get to my website, get to my email, and email me. And do get the book, and do watch the documentary. It's on my website free. You can watch it free. It's the uncensored one, so it's 90 minutes. I think you'll find it extraordinarily amazing. And if I get an email from you, I get about 300 emails a day, I will answer you because I have my BlackBerries with me, and I don't have any secretary who does it for me, or I email back myself.
Wonderful, Uri. Hey, you know, Uri, I just want to explain to you and to the listeners, the work that I did was in Israel was in Jerusalem with Professor Reuven Feuerstein. Do you know that name?
Yes, very much so. He's also a brilliant mind.
He's a brilliant mind, and I know him personally, and he has done amazing work for children from all over the world. And I'm going to meet him this summer in Zandvoort in the Netherlands. He will come to do a seminar with the International Center for the Enhancement of Learning Potential, which is based in Jerusalem. So they will come.
Yeah, he's a genius and a savior of poor children and families, and really, he's an incredible individual. But every country has those people who give so much back to society, to humanity.
Yes.
Unfortunately, the world is driven today by greed, by power, by, they want to take over. We want to be the biggest. We want to have more nuclear weapons. It's all about, unfortunately, it's all about money and power. And among these negative happenings, there's also a lot of positivity going on.
Yes, very much so, yeah.
Yeah.
And you know, Uri, you are aware of the fact that Einstein and Nikola Tesla have worked on free energy devices. We don't need fossil fuels. We don't need all the pollution. We can live in a world with free energy, and that's amazing. Because you said that everything is energy. And we can actually tap this energy that is all around us in the universe, tap it into a little box, and generate electricity for our homes, for our cars, and everything. And I want to ask you a question. Have you ever heard about the Schumann resonance? The Schumann resonance is when you, in your head chakra, open up to the central sun in the universe, and with your base chakra, connect to the center of the earth. Actually, nothing can happen to you, and you are protected with this energy field. Have you ever heard about it, the Schumann resonance?
Yes, I did hear about it. I did not delve into it, and I did not study or research it or investigate it. But yes, of course, I heard about it, and we are learning a lot of things now. We are opening our minds, the paradigm shift. All kinds of amazing things are happening, and I hope that indeed we can create a better world for our children's children, and so on, because right now the world is in a mess. There are wars, there are terrorism, there's pollution, economical instabilities, geographical instabilities, tsunamis, earthquakes, and so on. And I think someday we are going to fix all that.
Yes, I'm sure we will. And I think in the near future we'll also, you know, when disclosure happens, disclosure is not only about UFOs and ETs, it's also about free energy devices, so that we can clean up the air and clean up the earth and do good things together, all of us. And I see humankind as one people, because we all have red blood, we have different skin colors, different religions, but we are from one creator. I call it Prime Creator because I like the word Prime Creator. It comes from the Pleiadians. And you know that the Pleiadians are a benevolent extraterrestrial race. And they call it Prime Creator because the word Prime refers to that everything came from this, from source, you know?
Very, very much so. I know that. I know. But what I would like to say, and to kind of round up our interview, is that I do really hope that everyone who is listening will do some kind of a move to help other people, even if it's in a tiny manner. And I want everyone to think about positive things. It's, you know, the law of attraction.
Yes.
You send out a thought wave, something positive, and then it will come back to you in tenfold. It will bring good things into your life. So you have to materialize these things. You have to visualize these things. And you have to always think positive, because if you think negative, that is exactly what you're sending out to the universe. Negativity. And because the universe doesn't know between good and bad, it's going to send it back to you. So from today, just start thinking, I'm a successful person. I'm going to make it. I'm going to hit the target. I will always be successful. Start using only positive words. Do you agree with me?
Yes, of course. And you know, it works, because when you think positive, when you act positive, like you said, it's coming back tenfold or thousandfold to you. So it's indeed a very good advice that you give to the listeners, Uri, to stay positive and to embrace love, because unconditional love is the glue that binds us all together. It's called unconditional love.
Well, unconditional love, Martin, you know, we get mainly today from animals. I'm a dog lover, and I get unconditional love from my dogs. I've had dogs all my life, and it's a very powerful energy, the powerful energy of love. Love is an energy. It's a tangible energy. And I always say that since we are all connected to each other with an invisible spiritual thread, we can transmit energy through that spiritual thread. We can transmit the power of love, the power of healing, and so forth. And we have to start using it.
Yes, we have to start it right now, you know, because once we, you know, children also, when you have contact with children, and especially children with autism or Down syndrome, if you look in the eyes of those children, there is so much love shining from them. You know, it's amazing.
Well, children are open-minded. They believe. And many a time when I do my shows, I call kids up to the stage because then I know things are going to happen.
Yeah.
And you know, that's the next generation. And it's very important that they understand about you know, humanity, helping others. Unfortunately, most children today are into war games. The games are, you know, molding their minds. Most of these games, you see people blowing up themselves, killing each other, maiming each other. It's really sad. I just read yesterday an article that they did a statistical point of view of how many children go out and play. Well, it's shocking that most children stay indoors to continue playing games. in video games and computer games, what this does, basically, you're losing the, the chance of you exercising, running, putting yourself in a good shape, in a good form, get aerobic exercise. Slowly, the kids of today are losing that because of this tremendous addictive power of games and the internet. So the internet is also good, positive, but it's also bad. So, you can find and read on the internet anything you want. You can even learn how to build a bomb in a suitcase. The internet teaches you how to assemble suicide bombs and so on. So I try to neutralize myself from negativity. I'm a vegetarian. I have two children. My son Daniel is a lawyer in New York. My daughter lives in Los Angeles. I've been living in England for many, many years, 33 years. And I try to eat the right way. I care about my body. I'm a vegetarian, as I said. I exercise. I try to be a cheerful person. I try to help others. And basically, these are elementary things that anyone can do. You don't have to be an Uri Geller to do these things.
Exactly. But I can tell you, Uri, that many of the listeners, or all of them, are in fact conscious people, because otherwise they would not listen to this radio show. And because I always have conscious people who bring new ideas to the world, or actually ideas that are positive, and that's what you are doing. So can I ask you a little bit about the situation in the world? Those political leaders from countries, how can we, is it helpful to meditate, for example, on world peace and see if we can change the media, the way they bring all the negativity on the news channels? Is there a way that we can change this paradigm shift and that the media will start to send out more positive news to the people? Because that's very important.
Yes, Martin, I do believe in the power of meditation. I do believe in the power of global prayer. I'm a religious man. I believe in God, and I do pray every day to God. And I believe that the prayer itself is a kind of an angle of meditation. And it is possible, but the problem is that it's difficult to unite so many people together. Most people believe in God. Actually, when I have an argument or a debate with an atheist or an agnostic, which I respect those people too, I'm not a mind police. If you are an atheist or an agnostic, that's up to you. But many a time I say the following, that 7 billion with a B, people can't be wrong. Because there are 7.7 or 7.8 billion people on our planet. Most humanity believe in God. They believe in something out there, that there is something, a creator. Now you can imagine if we could unite 1 billion people together, or 2 or 3, which is kind of right now impossible, but if we could, and we could say, send a prayer to world leaders, for world peace, I think that something very powerful and pure and positive will materialize out of such event, a happening.
Yes, I do believe so too, and I do my best for it by playing uplifting music and having, words, I study words also, because etymology is the origin of words, and especially in the Hebrew language, the origin of a word is very interesting because it goes back to the meaning of it. And when you say positive things to people and explain the meaning of it, then people understand it and they can tune in to higher meanings of life, to consciousness, to God, however you want to call it. when you use the right words and when you speak from the heart, that's very important. That I hear you speak from the heart, Uri, and that pleases me. That is so wonderful.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you so much. You know, the word is a powerful tool. You can look at the Kabbalah and the Jewish mysticism, mm-hmm. the mysteriousness of the words in the Kabbalah and their meanings. The letters are powerful. They're actually astonishing if you do a little research into the mysticism of the Kabbalah. Yes, the power of words is important, and it's interesting because Jewish, I'm talking about now Hebrew, is one of the very rare languages that has not changed in 5,000 years. Mm-hmm. And you speak the same way as you spoke 5,000 years ago, you actually write the same way. It changed very little, which means to me that there is some kind of a power instilled in the world of language. There is some kind of an energy, some kind of a vibrational frequency that can reach the mind, influence your brain, influence people, influence your consciousness, influence your feeling, influence your the storage in the heart where you produce love from. So, yeah, I agree with you, Martin. Tell me, I want to throw the dice at you now. Where were you born, actually, Martin?
I was born in Achterkerke. It's a little village close to Middelburg, which is, in fact, between Rotterdam and Antwerp, roughly saying.
And what made you start this radio show, and how long have you been doing it?
I've been doing it for almost 4 years now, and making me do it was actually, after Israel, I started to live in Antwerp in the Jewish quarter, and I studied education in English language and mathematics. But then I didn't succeed with the study, and I studied somewhere else. I studied musical therapy, and I became a musical therapist, and that was successful. But actually, my heart was actually very much motivated to the truth, because as a child I already knew things when I saw the cover of a magazine, the cover of National Geographic with a picture of Machu Picchu. I felt that the official story was not correct, like you said about the evolution theory. And I started to dig in things, and when I was 13 years old I went to the Star Observatory and started astronomy and ufology. Already when I was very young, and my motivation is to bring out the truth, or as close to the truth as possible, and that's why I do 3 shows a week right now on ET First Contact Radio, and my website is intergalacticradiostation.com, and I keep going and I keep doing this because I love to do it.
Well, that's fantastic, and may I ask you another very personal question, and you don't have to answer it. But how do you actually earn your living? I mean, this is not a money-making venture for you. So what is your real job?
Well, I don't have a real job, actually, because the listeners know this already. Officially, I'm diagnosed with autism. That's why I, in the first place, went to Professor Feuerstein in Israel in 1994. So the government gives me a very small dose of money every month. And actually, doing the radio show cost me money. So actually, I don't earn, but I spend money on it.
And do you yourself, do you have a family?
Well, I have my twin soul who lives very close to me. And she is a wonderful friend. But I don't have kids and I don't have a girlfriend. But I have loving parents who always support me. And they live, like, say, 15 minutes driving from here. So I have wonderful parents who always support me.
That's so fantastic to hear. Please give my love to your parents, because they sound like very, very special people. And I'm sure that most of the individuals hearing us now around the world also have great parents. And if you have an argument with your parents or with anyone that you love, now is the time to make up. Now is the time to activate the power of forgiveness. So after you hear my show, my interview, which is another 3 minutes with you, I want you all, if you have an argument with someone you love, reach for the phone and forgive. And that will make you happier. And that's a good thing to do. And yeah, and you are you're a great individual who makes, that's what I feel, a lot of people happy and wondrous. And I'm sure that you pose amazing questions because you are covering the field of everything, as I understand, the universe and beyond, the UFOs and aliens and extraterrestrials and so forth. And I would very, very much like to hear from our listeners, if you did get the book, The Secret Life of Uri Geller, from Amazon.com, and you have read it, let me know your opinion. You can tell me anything. If you didn't like it or you don't like what I'm saying, just write me. I'll answer you back. I'm used to controversy, believe me. And if you have any questions that the book made you ask, email me and I'll try to answer you short. My answers are very short because I do get 300 emails a day, around 300, and I have to cover them all. So even right now while I'm speaking to you, I'm holding a BlackBerry in my right hand and I'm looking at, you know, emails that are coming in, and I have to answer many of them. So this is the way I live. And the reason I'm answering my emails is because if somebody took their time to get on my website and find my email address and then email me an email, they deserve an email back from me. So that's how I operate today.
Yes, Uri. And you know that the most important word for me is Ahavada, which means love in Hebrew.
Yes, Ahava. Let me read you an email that just came in.
Yes.
I will not mention the name because I cannot reveal who is emailing me. It's a rather long one, but I'll read it to you. And this gives you an idea of what type of emails I get. Hello, Uri. I have a story for you. The quick version is it's an uncanny watch story, which you've probably heard a few of. I had this Timex watch, which I bought maybe 1991 about, and I was wearing it until about 2004, went through several batteries and was on my third wristband when it stopped working. So I figured, no big deal, the battery is dead, and I took it to JCPenney's, that's probably in America, and asked them to put a new battery in for me. So they put a new battery in there, and it still doesn't work. So I figured, well, I've had this watch over 10 years. I guess it's time to buy a new one. So I look around the store, and I pick out another $30 Timex that was closest to the one I had. I get home, and I didn't want to throw the first watch away because the band still had some wear. My gosh, this is a long email. I think I better stop because I see it's a long, long email. But in the end, they say, I just got logical guess or lighthearted joke just to post something, but I do make an attempt at them first. Hope all is well, and then the name of the person. So I get these type of emails about watches, about spoons, and then about UFOs, mysticism, and so on and so on. And because I don't have the time to answer 300 emails in long, you will definitely get back an email from me, but it's going to be short and to the point. So, Martin, I want to thank you very much for inviting me onto your show. God bless everyone who's tuned in and listened, and I will be waiting to hear from you, and lots of love.
Lots of love, and thank you so much, Uri, and I wish you very much love and good luck to your life. I know that you have many contacts all over the world, and that you are very busy. So I also wish that you can find peace in your life and happiness in all that you do. And you know that Nachon is the word to agree with each other on all the things we have said.
Thank you very much for your kind words. We did a great hour. And again, a big hug and love to everyone.
Love to everyone. And Mazel Tov, Uri.
Toda.
Toda Rabba. Au revoir. Okay, my friends, this was Uri Geller, and that was amazing to have him on the show. You know that I love you all, and there were some very personal issues dealt in this show. But I'm happy with what I do, and I try to motivate everyone to be positive, like Uri said, and to carry on in your life and to make the best of it. Love and light, and stay tuned.